Welcome, friend. Welcome to the temple of the dividend discount models, where you will learn the secrets of present value and discounted cash flows. Oh, money. Okay, fine. Yeah, that was the American mantra. You've heard it before, maybe in the Business 121 class. Om money. Right, exactly. Very good. Okay, let's get started. Slide 17. Yeah, you know, it's going to look like Sanskrit. It's going to look like Greek. It's going to make as much sense as rocket science. But really, folks, once you've done these calculations a few times, it will be pretty straightforward what you're doing. You'll understand that all you're doing is creating a model that tells you what you think the stock is worth to you. Now, it's a little tricky, yes, I'll admit that. Yes, the concepts are a little tricky at first. But they're actually easier to do than they are to understand. So we'll do them, and then I do hope that the understanding will come, and maybe for some of you it'll come right away. I'm not sure, but I'll do my best, folks, because they're not as scary as they look, really. Let's get started on slide 17. The dividend discount models. The dividend discount models value shares on the basis of the present value of the future dividend streams that the stock is projected to produce. Remember, a company is in the business to make money, and that money's coming in the door. They go by various names, DDMs, dividend valuation models, DVMs. The name I like the best is the discounted cash flow models, but DCMs, they all mean the same thing. And if you recall from our first presentation, the value of a stock is based on the present value of its future cash flows. So therefore, the dividend discount model should be extremely popular, right? Well, during the 1990s, investors who adhered to these types of models were considered old-fashioned and outdated, fuddy-duddies. They're past their prime. It's a new era. Oh boy, when you hear that one, you got to run for the hills. But those investors weathered the 2000 to 2002 downturn very well. Yeah. How did it help from 2008? No, it didn't. It didn't matter where you were. Everybody got killed in 2008. Dividends have become important again to many investors. Slide number 18. Here is the dividend discount model in its purest incarnation. And I know it looks scary. Ah, it looks like math. But let's break it down and see that it's really not that difficult, especially because we're going to use the tables. We're not going to use exponentiation. Remember I told you at the beginning of the semester, you don't need a calculator with anything other than add, subtract, multiply, and divide. But let's take a look at it and see if we can understand it here. The value of a stock is equal to the present value of all expected future dividend payments. So what we're saying is the price sub zero, meaning at time zero, right now, the price right now, the price at the present, is equal to the dividend for year number one, that's D sub one, divided by one plus K. K? What's K? Well, in baseball, it's a strikeout. But no, here it represents what we require from our investments. It's the rate of return that we are interested in. Is it 10%, 8%? The book on page 183 for the 6th edition, and it's similar to the 4th and the 5th, so if you have those editions, they use 15%. Now, what do we say about anybody who's shooting for 15%? good luck. Exactly. Very good luck. It doesn't happen that often, and if you're lucky enough to get 15%, congratulations, but I'm not trying to do that. I don't know anybody who successfully has been able to do it. Doesn't mean there aren't. There are people who do that, but they're not teaching at a community college. Anyway, so that's the dividend for year one divided by one plus the rate of return that I, as an investor, require. And then we add to that the dividend for year number two and divide that by one plus the required rate of return squared. See, it's 2 years. And then the dividend for year number three divided by one plus the rate of return that we require cubed to the third power, and so on and so forth up until year number T, time T, whatever. So does that really scary? No, when you break it down, it's just written in such a way that only a mathematician would love. And so the book has this example, which is kind of screwy, folks. It's not a very good example. You have a company that pays you three annual dividends of $100 per share and then promptly goes out of business. So is that, it's not a, not a realistic scenario, but let's just say they did. Let's say they're paying us three annual dividends of $100 per share, and our required rate of return is 15%. Well, if we run the numbers, we need an exponential calculator, don't we? We take $100 divided by 1.151 plus the required rate of return. Look familiar? We did that in chapter one. We did that in the previous presentation for chapter number six. And then we add to that $100, the second dividend for the second year, divided by 1 plus 15%, 1.15 squared. And then we add to that the third dividend in year number three, divided by 1.15, 1 plus 15% cubed. And we come out with a little bit over $228. So if this company were going to pay us three annual dividends of $100, and we required a rate of return of 15%, then we would consider it worth a little over $228. Now, what happens if you change your required rate of return? Right, the numbers change drastically, as we'll see as we continue. But how many businesses pay three annual dividends and then go promptly out of business, right? Plus, we keep using this term present value. What does it mean? What does present value mean? Slide number 19. Present value is the value today of a lump sum or a series of payments to be received at some future date. It is the opposite of what is called future value. It is the inverse of future value. Did you work on the optional future value calculations in chapter 1? You didn't have to. But if you take in Business 121, the financial planning class, we did these, and we did them optionally in Chapter 1, but we're not, we don't need to do that. We saw what can happen is if we put away money for the long term in a good mutual fund in Chapter 4. So that's the same idea. So what's happening, folks, is we look at $10,000 today, and we say, what's it going to be worth in 10 years if we can get 8%? And that calculation is thus, 1 plus 8% to the 10 years, and what we find is that's 2.1589, right? So you multiply 10,000 times 2.1589. Now, if you go into the future value table, you'll see that that calculation's already been done for you. I told you, you don't have to do exponentiation. You don't have to calculate 1 plus 8% our rate of return to the 10th power for 10 years. That's for a lump sum. That tells us that $10,000 in 10 years at 8% will be worth $21,589. That's the future value. But what if we know we're going to get $10,000, or we expect to get $10,000 in 10 years? What is it worth to us? Not $10,000. What if we know we're going to get $21,000? I'm confusing you. Why don't you rewind a few seconds and start over again? $21,589. What if we know we're going to get $21,589 in 10 years? And we require 8%. We expect to get a rate of return of 8%. What is it worth to us? Well, it's the same calculation, but now it's 1 divided by. See, that's there it is, right there. That's what we just looked at. The dividend divided by 1 plus the required rate of return for however many years. That's it. So we know, if we do this calculation, that's 0.4632. But you don't have to. That's what we have the future value tables for. And in the face-to-face class, we would pass out the future value tables, and you would see that the present value multiplier for 10 years at 8% is 0.4632. So if we know we're going to get $21,589 in 10 years, and we require an 8% rate of return, that $21,589 times the present value multiplier, which is simply this calculation done for us already on a sheet of paper, it's already on the present value table. You might want to get that out. We'll refer to it in a little bit. If we multiply 21,589 times the 0.4632, we wind up with 10,000. So, what would you rather have? $10,000 now or $21,589 in 10 years if you believe 8% is a good rate of return and you expect to get that? Turns out, they're the same. Money has a time value. And $10,000 today, if we get 10% in 10 years, will be worth $21,589. Or $21,589 in 10 years, if we require 8%, is worth to us today $10,000. They're just two sides of the same coin. In finance, present value tells us today what the future value is worth. So that's why it's called the present value. What is it worth to us today? Make sense? It will. If it doesn't, don't worry. Go back. You're going to listen to this twice, aren't you? At least, thank you very much. It's a little tricky, but not that tricky. Slide number 20. So did the formula for the dividend discount model scare you a few slides back? The formula has the present value calculation built into it. The 1 divided by 1 plus the rate of return, the K, or the dividend, or whatever the value is. We aren't going to use these tables, folks. Relax. We're not going to have to do exponentiation. We mortals simply use the present value tables, just as we use the future value tables in Chapter 1, if you did those calculations. And if you didn't do it, you might want to go back and look. You could just listen to the commentary and take a look at the answer key. Because what happens is the formula becomes the dividend in year number 1 times the present value multiplier for year number 1. See, we don't have to do exponentiation. Plus the dividend for year 2 times the present value multiplier for year number 2, plus the dividend for year number 3 times the present value multiplier for year number 3, etc., etc., etc. So if you go to the present value table, you'll see that there are these values, these present value multipliers, for different years and different rates of return. And we're going to use that present value multiplier in the next few slides. Let's do the same exact, well, it's right here. Let's go. Why don't you get it? I don't think I have mine going up to 15%, because I think it's way too high, personally. But there's the link to the present value table, the slide 21. Let's do the same example from the book over again, but this time we're going to use the present value multipliers. All right? So print it out or have it on your screen. And I don't think I actually go up to 15. Maybe I do go up to 15. I think I go up to 14%, but it'll look close if it's 14%. 3 annual dividends of $100 per share. Required rate of return of 15%. Well, if you take $100... And you know what? I'm going to pause and see if I did, because now I can't remember. I'm getting old, folks. Hang on a minute. Yep. Yeah, I did. I went out to 15%, and I don't remember why, because I wanted to make sure that it was on there, because the book is using it. So if you go across to 15% for 1 year, you'll see that the present value multiplier is 0.87. So you multiply $100 times 0.87, you get $87. So $100 a year from now at 15% is worth to us today $87. Or you could also say that $87 now is worth $100 a year from now if we get 15%. 2 years from now, $100 is worth $75.60. Now, how did we get that? Go across the 15% down to 2 years, and you'll see 0.756. So the tables have those scary calculations built in. And then the third year, it's $100 times 0.658. Now make sure you can do this because it's not that hard, folks. Go across the 15% down to 3 and you'll see 0.658. You multiply $100 times 0.658 and you get $65.80. You add those three up and you get $228.40, which is very close to $228.32. And why aren't they exactly the same? Because the calculator uses 20 digits of accuracy and we're only using 3. So they're not exactly the same, but they're 8 cents. What is the present value of the future stream of dividends? The cash flows that are going to be returned to us by this stock? At least we expect them to be returned to us. At 15%, $100 in 1 year is worth to us today $87. In 2 years, it's worth $75.80. And in 3 years, $100 is worth $65.80. The sum of the present values of the future dividend cash flows equals our perceived value of the stock. Now, what happens if we only expect 10%? Right, exactly. The multipliers will change. And what you'll find is the stock is worth to us far more than $228. And if we only wanted 5%, it would be worth even more. Starting to understand what's going on here? Everybody looks at a stock or any other investment with a different intention of what they're going to earn, a different required rate of return. So everybody thinks it's worth different amounts. It's not worth enough for me. I want to have a higher rate of return. No, it's fine. I'm very happy with it. It's going to give me 7%. I'm very, very happy. You with me? Okay, good, good. Let's continue. Now, what we're going to do now is go through the various discount models and see how they build upon one another. And eventually we'll get back to this whole idea of present value. So stick with us, okay? It's going to take a while. And you may want to print out that formula sheet in Chapter 6. And print out the formula sheet in Chapter 6 and also print out the present value table. Because the very first discount model we'll take a look at that we'll actually use is the zero growth model. Because the first one is, you know, it's a pure form. It's not used that much. And this one's not covered in our book, which is sad because I like it because it builds to the next one, which is actually used quite often, and it is in our book. So this one, the zero growth model, assumes that dividends will continue at a fixed rate indefinitely into the future. And this is very useful for companies that have steady dividends. What companies? Utilities. Exactly. And it used to be banks, but not anymore. So the value of the stock is equal to the annual dividends divided by the required rate of return. Does this look familiar? Yeah, it is. Hang on a minute. So let's see an example. We have an annual dividend of $3 per share. And we require 6% from this stock. It's a utility. What do you expect, right? You take $3 divided by 6%, 0.06, and you get $50 per share. So if we require a 6% return, this company is paying $3 a share and is not raising their dividends, then we would be willing to pay $50 for this. It is simply another way to view dividend yield. And so for you math fans, let's take a look at slide 23. You'll see that the dividend discount model, the zero growth model, where we take the value of the stock equal to the annual dividends divided by the required rate of return, is simply another way to show dividend yield. Because here, the required rate of return is the dividend yield, and we just swap places with the value of the stock, which is the market price of the stock. And if you're familiar with swapping places here, in algebra, that's great, but don't worry about it. It's not that big a deal. what we see is the dividend yield is equal to the annual dividends divided by the current market price. So that company, $3 divided by a market price of 50, would give us 6%. Here we're saying, look, we know what the dividends are and we know what our rate of return is that we are interested in, 6%, then we can compute the value of the stock. So we just swapped places here is what happened. Investors who emphasize the zero growth model are valuing the stock almost exclusively for its dividend yield. They're looking at it as a source of income into the future, and they're really not worried about the price of the stock going up because it's a utility and it may go up a little bit, but it probably won't. So here's a real life example, slide 24. Consolidated Edison. Have you ever heard of them? They've been around for a long time, folks. Thomas Edison, remember? Yeah, right, exactly. This is the electric company for the city of New York, Manhattan. And so ED, that's their symbol, so you can look them up. Where do you think they are traded? New York Stock Exchange, right? Current market price is $55 per share, a little over $55 per share. That's on February 21st. And they're currently paying $2.50 per year in annual dividends. So the question for us as investors is, what is our required rate of return? Well, let's take a look at 8%. We want 8% from our stocks. Well, if we take the $2.52 and divide it by 8%, 0.08, that gives us $31.50. Well, and we believe the stock is worth $31.50, and its market price is $55. So is that a good deal? No. What if we lower our required rate of return to 5%? Okay, well, $2.52 divided by 0.05, 5%, is equal to $50.40. The stock is still too expensive if our required rate of return is 5%. It's too dear to us. It's too expensive to us. So with a market price of $55.29, investors are expecting a 4.6% return because that's what they're getting. The zero growth model works well for stable income producing stocks. And so here's a little hint. When you see utility, and it will be in the same order as we're doing them, right? First the price models and then the dividend discount models will start and it will be this one. On the worksheet number one, on the worksheet number two, and on the assignment sheet and in the exam, you know you're going to use the zero growth model. How's that? Right, exactly. For stocks that are growing, they're not growing their dividend, zero growth. And they're paying a stable dividend. And are utilities going to go anywhere? No. Unless people decide that they want to start taking cold showers in the dark, people are going to turn the lights on. They're going to turn the hot water on. Exactly. Slide number 25. Now, here is an interesting model, very popular with some people, called the constant perpetual growth model. Kind of a silly name. Constant and perpetual mean the same thing, don't they? So I don't know, but it reminds me of the Department of Redundancy Department. And it assumes dividends will continue to grow at a specified rate perpetually into the future, which means, you know, forever, or at least for a long time. And what we see is it's really the zero growth model, annual dividends divided by required rate of return, but we've added these two other things to it. We've added these two other parts of it. We take the annual dividends and we multiply them times 1 plus that growth rate, that constant growth rate of the dividends. And then we've taken the required rate of return in the denominator and subtracted out that constant growth rate. So it's the annual dividends divided by the required rate of return, the zero growth model, but we multiply the annual dividends times 1 plus the constant growth rate. In other words, what are they going to be if they continue to grow at this pace next year? divided by the required growth rate minus the growth rate of the dividends. And so the example on page 184 of the sixth edition, it's very similar in the fifth and the fourth, is a stock that is paying $10 per share. Well, if they're growing, or if they have been growing their dividend at 5% every year, that means next year they're going to have to pay $10.50, right? If our required rate of return is 15%, which, what is a book use 15%? That's way too much, guys. I hope that, maybe they're getting 15%. I wish them a lot of luck. So that, plugging these numbers into the equation, you get $10, the annual dividends, times 1 plus 5%, 1.05. And then we divide that by 15%, our required rate of return, minus 5%, the constant growth rate. And that's $10.50, right? $10 times 1.05. Do it on your calculator. You'll see it's $10.50. 15% minus 5% is 10%, which is 0.1. $10.50 divided by 0.1 is $105. So we believe that this stock is worth to us $105 per share. If our required rate of return is different, the result will be different. And this model turns out to be good for companies with consistent dividend growth. So why don't we take a look at a few of these? Slide number 26, Johnson & Johnson. You've heard of them, right? Baby powder, Q-tips, Band-Aids, Tylenol. They make all kinds of medical products. They make stents. Stents, what are stents? They're things that go into people's arteries of their hearts to keep them alive. And so they're a very long-lived company, been around for over 100 years and have been paying dividends and growing their dividends. And they're a blue-chip company. They're in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. So the current market price is $91.50, or at least it was on February 21st of 2014. And they're currently paying us $2.64 in annual dividends. Let's assume that dividends are growing around 8% per year. If our required rate of return is 13%, well, we plug in the numbers and see what we think it's worth. $2.64 times 1.08, the dividends times 1 plus the growth rate, divided by the required rate of return, what we expect in this case, 13%, minus the growth rate, 8%. If we do those two calculations, we get $2.85, 12, you know, just use as many digits as you want. We're not trying to be perfect here. Divided by 0.05, 13% minus 8% is 5% or 0.05, and we get $57.02. What's the stock selling for? $91.52. So is it really that good a return? No. Our present value, if we require 13%, is $57. So we think it's only worth $57, and the market is charging us $91.50. So we don't think it's a very good deal at this price. But, dear students, what if we just change our required rate of return to 10%? Not be so greedy, because I don't know about you, but I'm very happy with 10%. So now the formula becomes $2.64 times 1.08. That hasn't changed because the dividend growth rate is still 8%. But this time we take 10%, not 13%, but we require 10% minus 8%, the dividend growth rate. And that's $2.8512 divided by 0.02, or $142. See, if we only require a 10% rate of return, and Johnson & Johnson is growing their dividends at 8%, we believe that that company is worth $142. Yes, do you see? Note. The model is very sensitive to our choice of our required rate of return. So some people look at Johnson & Johnson, they want 13%, they say, it's a dog, it's not worth it. You know, it's not worth what I want to pay for it. They're the goofballs out on the industry, the investors are paying $91, and I think it's only worth $57. But if we require only 10%, our model says it's worth $142, and the current market price is $91. Yippee! What a deal. Uh-huh, exactly. And the Germans have a saying, which doesn't translate well, but it really does sum up the idea. That is what makes horse races. The fact that everybody looks at, you know, these stocks, as if they were horses, right, and bets on different ones and says, you know, I like this one, I like that one. Everybody sees something different. Slide number 27, Procter & Gamble. You ever heard of them? I hope so. If you go back and do the Chapter 5 80 years ago, you'll see that they have been a pretty darn good company. And their current market price as of the 21st of February was $77.97. They're in the Dow. Currently paying $2.41 of annual dividends. And let's assume that dividends are growing at 8% per year. Same assumption as Johnson & Johnson. If we take $2.41, I hope you do these on a calculator because they're not that hard, folks, once you do them enough times, times 1.08, 1 plus the dividend growth rate, divided by 13% minus 8%, assuming we want 13% from our stocks because we want to be paid handsomely by our stocks, then we get $2.6028 divided by 0.05 or $52. Once again, just as Johnson & Johnson did not measure up to our 13% rate, Procter & Gamble does not measure up to our 13% rate. But again, if we simply change our required rate of return, if we simply say, well, you know what, I'm happy with 10%, then the calculation is very similar. $2.41 times 1 plus the dividend growth rate divided by 10%. Minus 8%, or 2.6028 divided by 0.02, or $130.14. So the model says Procter & Gamble is undervalued if we require only 10%. And let me ask you a question. Are you thinking that all of a sudden people are going to stop using soap, toothpaste, diapers, toilet paper, shampoo, and shaving cream? Yeah, they own Gillette, they Charmin, and Ivory Snow, Tide, Crest, exactly, Head and Shoulders. Slide number 28, Coca-Cola, fizzy sugar water, and with a brown crayon put in it. I can't stand this stuff, folks, but people love it. I don't know, I just hate it. It makes your teeth feel really weird. But it's the most well-known brand name in the world. In fact, it's the second most well-known word in the world. The second, at least it used to be, I don't know if it's changed, but maybe Facebook now or Google is more, I don't know. The first, you're probably thinking, well, what's the first? The first one is also an English word. It's okay. What a great word, okay. So the current market price for Coca-Cola is $37.18 as of 21st of February, and they were currently paying $1.22 in annual dividends. Again, let us assume that dividends are growing around 8% per year. Our required rate of return is 13%. Again, are we going to be disappointed? Oh, yeah. Because we take the $1.22 of dividends, multiply it times 1.08, then divide it by 13% minus 8%, and we get 1.3176 divided by 0.05, or $26. We think it's worth $26 if we require 13%, but it's the market price is $37. Bleh, right? What if we only required 10%? $1.22 times 1.08. divided by 10% minus 8%, that's 1.3176 divided by 0.02, make sure you do this on your calculator, or $65, almost $66, $65.88. Maybe we ought to start researching Coca-Cola. It's available in every country in the world except for one. It's even available in North Korea, if you can believe that. But it's not sold through Coke of the United States. It's sold through a subsidiary through Italy, so the North Koreans say it's not an American country. I think it's not available in Cuba. It's the only country that Coke is not available. And the United States, The average person drinks over 400 Cokes a year. So that means somebody's drinking 800 because I don't drink any. In China, the average is 38 per year, and in India, it is 12. And if you go onto my Business 121 website, you'll see that the growth that has happened in China. 20 years ago, it was one or two. In India, 20 years ago, it was none. So you think Coca-Cola is just, you know, their mouths are watering about what's going to happen in China and India and all the rest of the world. But which country drinks the most per capita, huh? Which one do you think it is? Yeah, you'd be surprised. Maybe you wouldn't be. Ustedes que tienen parientes en su país de origen. you folks who have relatives in Mexico know which country drinks the most. It's Mexico. In Mexico, they drink over 700 Cokes a year per person. Yeah. Okay, fine. Slide number 29. GE, General Electric, another blue chip stock in the Dow. In fact, the only stock that's been in the Dow Jones since its inception in 1896. And on the 21st of February, they were selling for almost $25, $24.94, currently paying 88 cents in annual dividends. Let's assume the dividends are also growing at 8% per year. So if we run the numbers with 13%, we wind up with $19. Now, you know, pause the presentation. You do it, because we've done it already a few times. You need to be able to do it yourself. It's not that hard, folks. It's really not that hard once you do it a few times. If we want 13%, it doesn't look like GE is going to deliver. But if we only want 10%, GE looks like a screaming good deal, $47.50. But is anything perfect? No, especially these things. This is after GE dropped its dividend down to 40 cents a year from $1.24 in the 2008 and 2009 financial turmoil after decades, literally decades of growing their dividend. Well, what happened? Many people think of GE, they think of jet engines and locomotives and power plants and all the industrial things that GE makes. But GE is also a huge financial services firm. Chances are if you get a credit card through some of the smaller retailers, GE is the company that's actually handling the credit. And so they were hit really hard by the financial downturn. But they swore that they would bring their dividends back up. And so in 2010, they started raising the dividend again. First from 40 cents to 48, then the 56, then the 60, 68, 76, and now this year, 88 cents per year. Talk about a dividend growth rate. Wow. So now let's take a look at slide number 30. Would you buy GE? Well, Warren Buffett did. He bought it when in 2008 and 2009 when the organic matter hit the ventilating device, and he pumped $5 billion into their coffers. They needed the money to survive the downturn. And boy, is he looking like a genius now, folks. That's, you're right. You buy when the chips are down, but it ain't easy. Slide number, investing is simple, as he says, but it ain't easy. It wasn't easy for him to part with that money. At least for him, probably it was, because he doesn't have to worry about that. But it shows you how much courage he had to buy when everybody else was selling. Exactly. Slide number 30, Altria. Altria, who are they? Well, that's the name for a company they really don't know, want you to know who they are. They used to be called Philip Morris. Exactly, Philip Morris. They make Marlboro and Virginia Dims, and they make Siggies. And in fact, they're the company now. They split off the company that sells cigarettes outside the United States. So Altria is the company that sells cigarettes inside the United States. The company that sells cigarettes outside the United States is now called Philip Morris International. So, wait a minute. You are thinking of investing in a company that sells a product that when used is directed kills its customers? Well, as from an investment standpoint, it's been pretty darn good, folks. Current market price is $35.37. $21 $37. They're currently paying $1.92 in annual dividends. Let's assume again that dividends are growing about 8% a year. And if our required rate of return is 13%, then we take $1.92 times 1.08 and we divide that by 13% minus 8%, we get $2.0736 divided by 0.05, or $41.47. Wow, what a buy. Better than an 13% rate of return. If you ignore the potential tobacco-related lawsuit damage, but they haven't lost one in years. In fact, you haven't seen any of these. People have given up trying to sue the tobacco companies. And the fact that tobacco kills 400,000 Americans every year. It's been a very good investment. Using this model, investors are currently requiring approximately a 13.86 required rate of return. So if you run those numbers, you'll find that that's close to $37.37. It's actually $35.39. I don't want to use a whole bunch of digits. Almost 14% from our stock. If we don't mind that we're giving grandma and grandson and the kids in between cancer and heart disease, would you buy Altria? Okay. Let's continue. Hey, wait, who's that? Wait, what?
No.
What's going on here? Who is this?
You know who it is.
It's my conscience.
Come clean.
Come clean about what?
Fess up.
Fess up about what?
Where did you get the assumed dividend growth, huh?
I made it up.
Huh?
I made it up. All these companies are growing their dividends faster than 8%.
That's better.
Now, go away, you... Don't you hate having a conscience? If you don't have a conscience, you can make a lot of money. Now, what's going on here, folks? Every one we did, Johnson & Johnson, Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, GE, Altria, assumed that we were growing the dividends at 8% per year. But the truth is, all of these companies are growing their dividends faster than 8%. If we go back and we went back and we saw that this model is very sensitive to the assumed growth rate of dividends, as well as the sensitive to what we expect our required rate of return to be. So the recent growth rates of Coke, Altria, Procter & Gamble, Johnson & Johnson are all currently higher than 8%. And GE is about 25% they've been growing their rate at, but that's from a very low base. Coke is 8.8, Procter Johnson & Johnson is 9.1, Procter & Gamble is 9.5, and Altria is 10%. But the model doesn't work if our required rate of return is equal to or less than the dividend growth rate. You wind up getting very strange results. You get division by zero or negative prices. So we should actually raise our expected rates of returns for all these companies. All of these companies are actually much better buys than what our model is telling us for, at least the 10% in the case of Altria, 13% rate of returns. So this is a very good sign for those of us who like companies that raise our dividends consistently. But they're not that many of them, folks. It's a rarefied air. There's only a few of these blue chip companies that have long histories of rising dividends. And so, who else, right? I have a few at the bottom, right? Check out ExxonMobil, McDonald's, United Technologies, Honeywell, 3M, Johnson Controls, and Yum Brands. Who are they? Yum. Well, in the Chapter 5 assignment, I use them as one of the companies you can look up That's Kentucky Fried Rat, Pizza Crap, and Taco Smell. So yeah, and this is really good news for those of us who are invested in long-term oriented, large-cap, dividend-growing companies. They should do well over the next 5 to 10 years. Are they going to explode on the upside like a Farcebook or a Titter? Or you know, no, they're not. But they also won't crash and burn. There'll be times when some of them do, but there'll be times when the market as a whole does. But it's a good sign for these. Slide number 32, the constant growth model. This assumes that dividends will continue to grow at a specified rate for a specified number of years. Well, it's really the constant perpetual growth model with an added term to account for the growth for a number of years. This is not as important, folks. Not as important. It takes the constant perpetual growth model one step further, and adding a term to account for the constant growth for a number of years, just as we took the zero growth model one step further and made the constant perpetual growth model. But do you have to know this one? No. It's just a fancy way of saying it's going to happen for 5 years or 3 years or 10 years. And the same thing is true on the next slide. The two-stage dividend growth model. Look at this. It just takes the previous model one step further and says that we're going to continue to grow at a specified rate into the future, presumably the fast growth stage, and then grow at a second, presumably slower growth stage. This makes a math major really excited because they actually understand what all those little things mean. But many decades ago, Benjamin Graham warned against using overly sophisticated mathematical models to value stocks. In fact, he warned against any program, any system that eliminated judgment. So this model may look very impressive, especially to those who do love math, but it has some serious problems. It's very difficult to accurately predict future dividend growth during the initial fast growth stage of a stock because usually companies don't pay dividends or very little dividends while they are growing quickly. Why? They need the money to reinvest back into the company. So you don't have to do this one either. But it's there in the book for those of you who are so inclined. Slide number 34. Observations of the dividend discount models. Well, how do you use them for a company that isn't paying any dividends? The simple answer is, you can't. If you're not paying any dividends, all the terms go to zero because it's zero dividends divided by whatever, zero, 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 times whatever, depending if you use the future value tables, and basically you wind up with zero. If a company's not paying any dividends, the dividend discount models say it's worth nothing. Okay. The constant perpetual growth rate is usually an unrealistic assumption, except for those small number of rarefied companies. And dividend growth rates are very difficult to estimate with large cap, well-established companies, General Electric, Coca-Cola, Johnson & Johnson, Procter & Gamble. Historical growth rates may be useful, but with fast-growing companies in new industries, it is almost impossible. The problems of the dividend discount models notwithstanding, repeat after me, so I'm listening. The value of a stock is based on the present value of its future cash flows. Yeah. So in other words, the fact that the company is going to earn money and hopefully pay us in the form of dividends, those of us who love dividends, gives the stock a value. And these models are the models that we use to compute that value. Now, okay, here's where it gets fun, right? Let's go to slide 35. When we come back, we're going to take a look at my favorite model, folks, the discounted cash flow model. So now what I want you to do is go back and do this presentation that we just did over again. Do worksheet number one, do the zero growth model and the constant perpetual growth model. And when we come back, we will take a look at the discounted cash flow model on slide 35. Okay? So I will see you in our next presentation where we do the discounted cash flow model.